Session number 27049.
Mr. Hopewell, Reel 3. So, this trip down to Port Said and back, nothing much else happened. And did you go back to Liverpool or did you go back to Belfast?
No, we went back to Belfast.
And that, from then on, that's where you were based?
Yeah, from then on, that's where I was based, yeah.
And what was it like at Belfast? I mean, you've told us about the Caroline, but what was it like as a shore base when you went ashore?
Oh, it was okay, yeah.
What would you do when you went ashore?
Oh, drinking, dancing.
Where? Do you remember what sort of place you go to?
Yes, yeah. If we felt respectable and wanted to go decent dance hall, we used to go to the Floral Hall at Glengormley, take the tram out there. It's setting up the hill in Parkland. Loved
it. What was it like? What was a night out in the Floral Hall dance hall?
That was great. It was a decent band there, decent floor, and a nice type of girl went there, if you know what I mean. And I can't remember whether there was a bar there or not, I can't really remember. But it was
would
very pleasant.
Would you drink much? Would you go to pubs first? Did you drink?
I don't think I did drink before I joined up. I don't think I went into pubs as such. My life really was taken up by going to sea cadets, a civil defence messenger, and one night a week fire watching in Northampton.
You didn't mention either of them. But
no, I didn't. I didn't
a bit
get
later. So what were the dance halls like? I mean,
That was okay. Then we used to go to the Floral Hall, which was the one behind the City Hall in Belfast. You know. If we had been drinking and we feel a bit on the rough side sort of thing, we used to go to a place called the Rialto. And this dance hall, you had to go up some stairs to it. It was above some shops or whatever. And it wasn't all that big. And there were sort of coloured lights around, very dimly lit. And there'd be a three-piece band stuck up one corner. And the type of girl that went there was quite a different type of girl to the one you got at Floral Hall. And I remember this particular night, we were there, and I offered this girl a cigarette. She said, "Oh, thank you very much." She said, "If you don't mind, I won't smoke at the moment. I'll finish this tipper," and took a tipper from behind her ear and stuck the one I gave her behind. How low can you get? Oh, God. Anyway, it was at that dance hall I picked up a girl, and I was seeing her home, or it'd be midnight or gone. And I can remember saying goodnight to her on the windowsill of a sort of a factory. A woman came screaming along, calling her. And she came up to me. She said, "You better get home straight away." She said, "Your dad's out looking for you." She says, "And if he sees you, he'll kill you because he hates sailors." So I scarpered pretty fast.
How did you get on with the Irish, generally?
Very well, very well. At the Floral Hall, I met a lovely girl called Sally. She had two sisters, both of whom married naval men. Her father worked in the dockyard. I got my feet under the table there. I used to get some tobacco instead of cigarettes for my allowance to take to her father. So when I used to go to her house, I used to get a fry-up. Lovely girl.
Were you aware of the trouble between the Protestant and Irish?
We were told not.
Catholics?
Yes, we were told not to go down the Falls Road area. Because that's where the troubles were, you know.
So
you say you didn't, no.
Did you see any sign of trouble?
No, not
in Kensington.
No, no.
Now, so what happened next? You've been out to think. What was the sort of routine? You know, you don't need to go through every trip, of course. But I mean, what were you on after you got back from?
We were on Atlantic convoys for all the time I was based at Belfast, mainly.
And what were they like? What was a typical Atlantic convoy like for you?
Well, it was just a normal routine, three watch routine in the WT office. You know, sometimes the weather was reasonable, sometimes pretty horrible. We would, if we, if we suspected U-boats, we would trail across them, you know, sound them out, and then we'd probably get up speed to go across to drop depth charges and hedgehogs and the whole thing. If they hadn't been set quite properly, sometimes the whole ship used to judder like blazes, the lights used to go out, and you think, this is it, you know. And this would happen periodically. But other than that, you know, it was just a day.
What would you do? Where would you go to?
We didn't go to anywhere. We never got to America at all. I think what used to happen, we used to take convoy partway across and swap over from the other side and you know, do it that way. We never landed anywhere.
Now, any particular incidents from any of these Atlantic convoys you remember, or are they just a routine period, you know?
No,
dangerous, but routine.
No, dangerous, yeah. No, they're sort of more or less routine, you know. It's just followed the same sort of pattern.
And any no particular events or clashes or submarines you remember?
Well, I can't really remember now. I mean, we were doing, we you know, we used to do this sort of thing and trail around and then we'd do another search afterwards. I think there must have been the odd occasion when we picked up some debris. But I can't really remember now. It's been so long ago.
So what happened next after that?
Right. The D-Day operation. Prior to D-Day, The group assembled in Milford Haven Harbour, and we were there for 10 days to a fortnight, I suppose, and we were just waiting there, just sitting there. We knew something was going to happen, but we didn't know when or what we were going to do. And it was while we were there, we were allowed to go ashore to a little village called Dale, and we had a leading seaman that took the cutter out to take a dozen of us so at a time, just for a couple of hours in the afternoon, give us a break from ship, land at Dale to be collected a couple of hours later, and we got stuck up on the rocks. And we had to wait till high tide before they could refloat it. I spoke to, I had a letter from one of the lieutenants on board ship, who's now in Australia, a few years ago, and he asked me if I recalled it. Apparently, this leading seaman's mother wrote to the skipper and said, because he'd lost his hook, she complained to the skipper and thought it was most unfair. Can't imagine any mother doing this. But apparently, it wasn't all that long before he got his hook back. But I remember at the time we were there, all I was doing was amending code books.
Now, what do you mean? How did you amend code?
Well, we were replacing certain phrases and words for others. These were signals that were coming through, so it's probably another security thing, you know.
And this was a regular routine job?
This was, while we were waiting there, this was a routine job for that spells that we were in Milford Haven Harbour. And then we set sail then, and then we were patrolling the channel between Portlandville. And the French coast.
Now tell me about those channel patrols. This is during the actual period leading up to and after D-Day, isn't it?
Yes, that's right, yeah. Can't remember an awful lot about it, really. I don't think it wasn't as rough as the Atlantic, I know that. I know that we had to come in overnight to refuel, and the Blackwood took up our position in the sweep, and when we went out in the morning, she'd gone down. There, but for the grace of God.
Did anything happen to you during those patrols?
I think we did sing something, I think, during there. Yeah.
But you don't remember it?
I can't remember now, no.
So what's the next thing? Would the next thing be, from your memory, be the Arctic one, the Russian?
The next thing that in my life that I can remember. I mean, might have done another two or three Atlantic convoys in between. I can't remember that. But anyway, we were assembled up in Loch Hugh and we went up to Russia.
Now, what do you remember of that Russian convoy?
I think what I really remembered was that it was cold, but it was a dry cold. It wasn't a damp cold, if you know what I mean. And we got up there and can't really remember much about, you know, just on board and doing your job. But we went to Vayanga Bay. We didn't go up as far as Mamansk. And this is in the Kola Inlet. We were allowed ashore a couple of afternoons while we were there. And it was pretty bleak. And what I can remember of the place, there were sort of scattered properties and a bit like Scapa Flow, I think.
Was this to Murmansk or to Poliana? They're partly the same, but I mean...
Well, no, this was... it was Vayanga bound.
Yeah, it was in Vayanga, right?
Yeah,
sorry,
it was in Vayanga, yeah. There was nothing to buy, nothing to see or do, but we went to the post office, and I can remember giving the girl behind the counter, I gave her some chocolate, she gave me some stamps, and then she gave me these telegrams. And I think it was there somewhere, I picked up these two or three Russian newspapers. Of course, I didn't understand a word, but it was a souvenir, because it's about the only thing you could get. And then, I think probably the second afternoon, Russian soldier came up to me, asked him for cigarettes, or indicated this is what he wanted. I think I gave him some, and he gave me his cap badge. So I thought it was fair enough swap. So that's where they came from.
The return voyage, any trouble?
Well, not as far as I was concerned.
And so let me ask you about some, you know, the people you were with. How did you get on with the lower deck, you know, the other ratings, and particularly the coders and the signalers? Were there any particular friends? How did you get on with them?
Oh, fine. You know, we were all real sort of chums together. You know, we were all quite... quite friendly, yeah.
Did you have any special pals?
I used to go ashore a lot with Ron Easter, who was a telegraphist. Ron Easter, my telegraphist, yeah. They used to go ashore with him. But there were others I used to go ashore with.
What was
with,
he like, Ron Easter? I mean, he's the one you mentioned him before. I mean, yeah, what was he like as a bloke?
He was all right, talked a lot. Still talks a lot. Probably like me.
And he was, I mean, what made, I mean, was it just that you worked in the same office that attracted you two together, or was it just...
Well, probably had something to do with it. We knew each other pretty well, you know, because we were on duty all the time. So
you wouldn't change which one you were on with? You
we were a pair. We were all with the same telegraphist.
Any other special pals you remember now?
No one special.
Now, what about the petty officers, the leading team? How did you get on with them? What were they like?
Well, the leading seaman, signalman was Mick Curran. He was a pre-war naval chap. He lived at Carrickfergus, Irishman.
What was he like?
Tall, thin, okay, yeah. He's a married man. I don't know whether he's got family or not.
What was he like as a leading seaman? Was he fair?
Yes, he was fair, yes.
Yeah. Petty officers,
Yes, they're all okay, yeah.
And what about your officers? What were they like?
They were all okay. Although I do know the gunnery officer was a bit of a bee, and I know he got...
By bee, you mean bastard.
Yeah. I know he came back ashore one night and got thumped ashore, probably by some of his underlings, I don't know.
What was the signal officer like?
Oh, he was okay, yeah. Bloke called Antrobus, Sid Antrobus. He came from somewhere up in Lancashire.
Was he friendly? I mean, how much contact would you have with him?
I didn't have much contact to do with him.
So he was quite remote from you?
More or less. You know, anything that went on went through the leading seaman sort of thing. We had one or two good ones ashore. And I can remember being ashore one night, and the officers had a party on board ship, and it was a real ranty tan of a do. My God, I remember one woman that came aboard. She was called Mrs. Mona Raw. I don't know how Raw was spelled, but I think an awful lot went on in the wardroom that night, and there's more than a few tots went down as well. I know I had a record that I'd bought called, do you remember it, Embraceable You? No, you probably wouldn't. It was at that time, you know, a real smoochy dance. And they borrowed it. I never did get it back. I suspect it got smashed, I don't know.
So So was it a happy ship? I mean, overall, yes. Was the Cook a happy ship? And if so, what made it a happy ship?
I think it was a happy ship. I think, A, because the officers were fair. B, it was a small ship. Everybody sort of really got on with everybody. There's a great camaraderie. In fact, I didn't want to leave it when the time came to leave.
Now, did anything else happen in between the you know, you went to about October to Russia. Anything else you remember, or was it just...
I can't really remember now.
Now, how did you come to leave the ship, and what did you feel about it?
I felt cut up about it, actually.
Why? Tell me why.
Well, A, because I knew everybody aboard ship. I was happy on the ship. I just didn't want to leave it to go to the unknown.
Now, why did you have to go? I mean, why you? Why not the rest of them? Because the most of them stayed on board these captain-class ships.
Now, I'll tell you why. Because when I first joined up, it was suggested that probably later on, after I'd been to sea, that I might put in for a commission. But it never came about. Why, I don't know. My reports were okay.
So why did that mean you have to leave the ship?
Well, because if that was going to happen, I would have to have gone on a course and I've got to leave the ship to do it. And it didn't happen. I got down to Devonport after I left the ship, drafted back to base, and I don't suppose I was down there all that long. And I got...
Now, this was December you left the ship, was it?
Can't really remember now.
But about then?
Could have been, yes. I don't think I've got it anywhere in here.
And what was your next posting then?
I was out to HMS Mayena, which was a transit camp outside Colombo.
And what was the trip out like? When did you go?
I went out on a trooper, on a troop ship.
Do you remember the name?
I can't. I don't know whether I've got it here.
It doesn't matter.
No. We were taking Wrens out as well as Matlows. And I can remember being on duty, the Wrens quarters, of course, they were in the better quarters. We were in the anywhere else. I remember going through the sewers.
Now, when was this?
I can't really remember. Well, we arrived in Colombo on VE Day, so...
So it was April, May.
It must have been April, May time. And I remember having to be on guard duty of the Wrens quarters to make sure nobody else went through there.
And I could... Did you have any VE Day celebrations?
Yeah, 2 cans of beer.
And what happened when you got to HMS Mayena?
Mayena, M-A-Y-I-N-A. It was a transit camp. I was only there a week or so, 10 days. And I joined the destroyer, the Venus, in Colombo.
And
still a coder.
And this would be May still?
Yes, yep.
And what were you doing with Ada? What were your first impression of Venus? She was a destroyer, wasn't she?
She was a destroyer. Bigger ship than the Cook, of course. But still a small ship as far as the Navy's concerned, as opposed to cruisers and...
Was it a better ship, but more comfortable? What was it like in comparison?
I can't really remember. Probably about the same, I suppose. The duties would still be the same. Code books for that area rather than the Atlantic or the Med. We had to change at Port Said and Jib if we went through the Med. You dumped one lot of code books and picked up another lot.
So this would it be Pacific? Or? It'd
be Pacific, yeah.
And what was the Venus doing? What did you do aboard the Venus?
We were really doing escort work and we went all down the Malay Straits, calling it Penang and Sabang. It'd be Australian ships that we'd be doing, but we didn't get down as far as Australia by long chalk. And then we came back up that way again and went to Cochin and Madras.
Now, you don't remember anything about this period at all then?
Not really, you know. just on board ship, just sailing through waters, and it certainly wasn't like the Atlantic. I mean, it,
did you have a crossing the line ceremony?
Oh yes, we did.
What do you remember of that?
Getting dunked about half a dozen times. And that was quite fun, actually.
What was it? Can you explain what it was?
Yes, you'd got somebody that's Father Neptune, you see, and you sit on this sort of chair, and you'd got this canvas tank of water, and it'd sort of lather you up, and whatever, you know, and shave you with a sort of mock razor blade, and you'd read out the riot act, and then tip you in, you know. it made a bit of light-hearted
moment. Were you in action at all on the Venus? Because you were
no,
still in the...
No, don't
so
remember.
You missed clashing with the Japanese.
Yeah, I don't, yes. Yes, because...
Well, that ended about... It ended in August.
That's now, right, yeah.
Now, what about the climate? How did you take to the climate? I
mean, okay, yeah. Being dark-skinned, it didn't affect me. I was quite happy with the climate. Yeah.
What was it like below decks in hot weather?
Well, I suppose it was okay. I can't remember ever feeling awful about it all.
Did you get ashore anywhere interesting?
Yeah, only Cochin and Madras. Oh, Singapore. You called Singapore. Yes, we had a couple of trips ashore there. I can remember in the docks in Singapore seeing Japanese prisoners of war unloading a ship. Some troops or something or other. I can see them all running down this gangway, you know. That was okay.
You don't remember anything particular from the visit ashore? I mean, what would you do in a typical... I mean, you know...
Oh, you go and have a few drinks somewhere or whatever. Oh, now, I think it was Cochin. I don't think it was Madras. There were two or three of us, probably all from the signals. We went ashore in Madras, and we were looking in jewellers' windows, one does. And the owner came out to us, blah, 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 spoke English. Come in, you know. Well, I don't think we intended buying anything. And he was chatting to us, and he said, you know, you'd like to come out, I'm going to a hotel, you know, game of billiards, you know, do you want to come along, he said, and, you know, you can have some drinks and tea if you like. So, you know, free hand, there's two or three of us, we were safe enough. Why not? He seemed friendly enough. But there was an ulterior motive. Apparently, he'd got a shop in Colombo, and he used to get some Fleet Air Arm chaps to take filigree silver over to his shop in Colombo, which he couldn't do legally during the war, or perhaps never. And apparently these obviously got drafted, and of course he couldn't do it anymore, and he wanted us to do this for him. He said, you come back tomorrow, he says, and I'll have a parcel ready for you, and he was going to pay us off, you see. So, okay. Yeah.
You agreed?
We agreed, yeah. Anyway, on the way back to the ship, we said, no, this is dicey, we're not going to have this. So we got back on board in the mess, and we were telling the tale to the others. And there was a Geordie, I think one was a Geordie and one was a Scouser. Oh, where's this shop? Well, we'll do it for him, you know. Anyway, we told them about it, and they went. They're a couple of crafty devils. They brought back this box of silver filigree stuff on board. One of them went back the next day to the chap and said that his mate had been apprehended by the customs people. He was absolutely, God, he didn't tell me what was happening. No, he said, but he said, my mate's in terrible trouble. And of course, this bloke was most apologetic. And what they did, they just dispersed all this stuff in the mess to everybody and gave it all away. In fact, I had a couple of bits and I brought it home to my mother at the time. Well, they were quite right, couple of Charlies. But no, you mixed with all sorts. We had a Cockney on board. I don't know whether it was on the Venus or the... I think it was the Venus. And he opened his mail one day and he said, huh, letter from home. He said, oh, Gran's in clink again. What do you mean, in clink? He said, oh, he said, she gets pissed. He says, they're always putting her in clink, you know. And apparently their way of life, they used to, steal from stores. They would steal from Marks and Spencers, Woolworths, Debenhams, you know, those sort of stores. They wouldn't touch the little shopkeeper. They can't afford it. The big people can, you see. And this seemed to have been a way of life with them. But, you know, I don't think anybody ever missed anything in the mess. You know, it was a different ball game with his mates in the... But I imagine after the war, he was probably doing something similar.
Now, do you remember VJ Day, you know, when the Japanese war? That must have been a relief to you, really.
Well, yes, no. After I'd been to Cochin and Madras, we had to go down to Cape Town, Simonstown, six-week refit. And it was while we were there that VJ Day happened. So, whooped it up in Cape Town.
What do you remember of the celebrations?
Oh, I don't much. I got drunk. I stayed at the Tok H place in Wynberg, which is a suburb of Cape Town. And we were there a couple of nights, and it was super.
And then what happened? What did you do while you were refitting?
Well, for a month of the 6 weeks, of course, I was on leave because I went to... Well, I had a fortnight's leave up country with Bill Shapland. He came from Newton St. Cyrus near Exeter.
Where did you go?
To a place called Bonnyvale, up in the wine-growing area. And we went up by train. We had a warrant, and we had a fortnight up there. English-speaking family, the Everetts, they'd been out there donkey's years.
And what were you doing there? I mean, were you just on holiday, or were you helping with the fruit picking?
No, just on holiday. They did this, you know, this was their war effort, if you see what I mean. We could have chosen to stay at a seaside in the city or up country on a farm, and Bill Shapland and I decided we'd like to go up on a farm.
And what was it like?
Oh, absolutely.
I know you remember this well, because you went back there recently.
Yeah.
What was it like?
Oh, it was super. We went up by train, and we got this... The line, it's a very slow train. I think we left Cape Town about 4:30 in the afternoon. It was dark by the time we got to Bonnyvale. And the station was a bit like the Will Hay type, you know, sleepers for platforms and a wooden shed. And I remember a taxi driver was waiting for us. And the farm was outside of Bonnyvale, about 2 or 3 miles out. And he was speeding like anything. It must have been near 11 o'clock at night, I think, and he was going around these twisty bends. We arrived at this farmhouse, and there's a little old dear, this is Miss Micklem, who was the sister-in-law who lived with them, and she was holding a little hurricane lamp. And this, we thought, God, where have we come to? But they're most hospitable, lovely people. I think probably Mrs. Everett and Aunt Lou, as we called her, they were sisters. I think... They were probably a fairly well-off family of Hertfordshire. The name was Micklem, and I think they were fairly well-to-do people, their relatives in England. But it was grapefruit and orange picking time, and Bill and I used to go down the orange groves, and that was great. We went shooting. You got air arsenal, we used to do that.
And this was for 2 weeks?
We had 2 weeks, yeah. And on the way back then, I got this septic throat and went into sick bay. And of course, as I've said before, my mate wrote to them, and they wrote to the skipper and said, would they send me back? So I had another fortnight. In between, of course, I'd had nearly a week in sick bay. So 5 weeks of my 6 weeks in Cape Town, plus the two or three days that we had whooping up in VE Day, was sort of more or less taken up.